This program is designed to provide general information with regards to the subject matters covered. This information is given with the understanding that neither the hosts, guests, sponsors, or station are engaged in rendering any specific and personal medical, financial, legal, counseling, professional service, or any advice. You should seek the services of competent professionals before applying or trying any suggested ideas.
Welcome to The Joy of Living, featuring your host, Barry Shore. In this time of busy and rush, we don't always take the time to appreciate the life that we have and the love of those around us. Now, the ambassador of joy invites you to take a moment, no, take an hour, and find the joy of living. Here is Barry Shore.
Good day, beautiful, bountiful, beloved, immortal beings, and good-looking people. Remember, you're good-looking because you're always looking for and finding the good. And we have good in abundance today. You are going to be truly touched by our remarkable guest. She is going to go deep into your soul and reveal to yourself things about you that will make you even more happy and joyful. But we're going to do it in a very painful way initially. So just get ready, because you have tuned into The Joy of Living with your humble host, Barry Shore. And everything you want to know about our guest is going to be at our website. You don't have to write down anything. You don't have to remember anything. Just lean in and let things flow over you. Go to www.barryshore.com, BarrySHore.com. And you have tuned in consciously and conscientiously today to the joy of living for one reason and one reason only. It's a great reason, because you care the most in the entire world about you, YOUEWE. And that's great, because when you care the most about you, you make the world a better place. When you're the best you, you make a difference in the world. And when you do this, you now become a catalyst for leveraging whatever you have in life in the good, the positive, the purposeful, the pleasant, and the powerful. Now, you tuned into this show, and I'm happy to tell you at the moment that you are joined by 352,613 people around the world, all listening, tuning into The Joy of Living with Barry Shore. Because you know that on this show, we discuss the three fundamentals of life. And when you learn these three fundamentals, you will be healthier and wealthier. And as Jack Canfield, the co-author of Chicken Soup for the Soul, said to me, who doesn't want that, Barry? When you live and joy daily, you'll be healthier and wealthier. And who doesn't want that, right? Now, the three fundamentals of life are, number one, life. Your life has purpose. And when you lead a purpose-driven life, you can go MAD. Now, in this case, MAD is a wonderful acronym. It stands for Make a Difference. So you lead a purpose-driven life, you make a difference. And the third fundamental of life is that you can uncover the secrets and the power of everyday words and terms. Everyday words are simple. WWW. Ask anybody what WWW stands for. Invariably, they'll tell you it has to do with the internet. And factually speaking, they're correct. But in our world, the world of the positive, purposeful, powerful, and pleasant, WWW stands for, drum roll, fanfare, da-da, da-da. What a wonderful world. And what is a word, right? W-H-A-T-A. What a wonderful world. And a tip of the hat, of course, and a thank you to Louis Armstrong, Satchmo, for enabling that song to go viral and touch not just tens or hundreds of millions of people, but billions of people around the planet. And whenever you hear that song, you can't help it. What do? Even the opening bars, right away, you begin to smile. Now, smile is one of the greatest words you could ever internalize, utilize, and leverage in your life, because smile stands for seeing miracles in life every day, every day. Now, invariably, when I speak to groups, and just before COVID, I spoke to a group of over 5,000 people. In person. Remember, we'll be able to do that again soon, right? So as I'm speaking about seeing miracles in life every day and telling you my story, people raise their hands and they say, but Barry Shore, I've been here for hours where I haven't seen any miracles. And I asked them, are you here? Can you hear? Can you see? Can you stand? Can you walk? Do you have water, drink, food to eat, a place to sleep, family, friends? Every single one of those is a miracle. Now, what's the simple proof? Simple proof. A million people didn't get out of bed this morning. You know why? They died. By definition, if you're watching this, you're listening to this, you didn't. If you didn't, you're alive. In life, you have an obligation. You have an obligation to live exuberantly. Now, most people, we have over 300 plus thousand people that tune in every week. We're up to over 352,000 right now. We'll probably finish up by 360,000 people tuning in to the joy of living. And they do it because they understand my story and why I can speak about this. My story, for most of you who know, because we have over 300,000 plus every time, imagine the following. Standing up in the morning, hale and hearty, able to leap tall buildings in a single bound, and that evening in the hospital, completely, totally paralyzed. Yeah, rare disease, not from an automobile accident, not from a spinal injury. Rare disease took over my body, never heard of it before, and I was left a quadriplegic, nothing on my body moved. I was 144 days in hospital. I was 2 years in a hospital bed in my own home. I couldn't turn over by myself. I was 4 years in a wheelchair. See my hands? Not like yours, but hey, I got hands. 4 years in a wheelchair. I had braces on both my legs, my hips to my ankles. And that was progress. Thank God today I'm able to be vertical and ambulatory with the help of a 7-foot walking wand made for me by a Zen master. But I still can't walk up a stair by myself. I can't walk up a curb by myself. And I've helped 12 hours a day, 7 days a week. But you hear my voice. Positive, purposeful, powerful, and pleasant. Why? Because I've learned to see miracles in life every day. Still takes me 10 minutes to get out of bed in the morning, but I get out of bed. Couldn't do that for years. But I got to tell you a quick story. My 8-year-old niece comes over to me a few weeks ago and she says, Uncle Barry, can we spell smile? S-M-I-E-L. And I thought about it. Smile sounds the same. I asked her, how come? She said, because then it would stand for seeing miracles in everyday life. Out of the mouth of babes. How wonderful is that? But why was she doing that? Because she wanted to create the kind of world that she wants to live in. Now, CREATE is a wonderful acronym and stands for causing rethinking, enabling all to excel. That's what she was doing, rethinking. We have a brain. Your brain has 100 plus billion brain cells and 10,000 trillion synapses connecting them all. And they're there for more than deciding what kind of latte you want this morning. The ability to do your own neuro-linguistic programming to live in joy, happiness, peace, and love every day, no matter the circumstances. Now, before we bring on our amazing guest, and she is amazing, I'm going to warn everybody that I do use a lot of four-letter words. I do. Now, of course, the four-letter words that we use, we're in the world of the positive, purposeful, powerful, and pleasant. Four-letter words are live, life, love, grow, hope, free, gift, play, pray. Four-letter words. I urge everybody to use them. And I even use the four-letter F-U word because it's fun and for the shock value. And the four-letter F-U word we use is fun. Fun. But people say, Barry, sure, fun's only spelled with three letters. Not in our world, the world of the positive, purposeful, powerful, and pleasant, and Dr. Seuss, fun is spelled F-U, capital N, capital N. So when you see your family and friends after the show, and you have a twinkle in your eye and a smile on your face, remember that stands for, you point your fingers at F-U, everybody. Remember to add right away, capital N, capital N. I say, where did you get that? You say, I listen to Barry Shore, the joy of living. He teaches people to go F-U to the world. Capital N, capital N. So before we bring on amazing Marie, I just want to urge everybody to consider doing the following. From now forward, for the rest of your life, I want you to use the two most powerful words in the English language, consciously and conscientiously. And these two words are, drum roll, fanfare, da-da, da-da. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank stands for to harmonize and network kindness. To harmonize and network kindness. The Dalai Lama's been quoted as saying, I read in his writing, be kind whenever possible. And it's always possible, he says. So imagine when we can go back into the coffee shop and you order your fancy latte for $5.50 and you sit down and somebody brings it to you. You say, thank you. Imagine you walk in the coffee shop, you order a fancy latte for $5.50, and a few minutes go by, nobody brings it to you. You go up to the counter, they say, oh, I'm sorry, we forgot, we're so busy, we'll bring it to you. A few more minutes go by, and somebody brings it to you, Say thank you. You're walking out of the coffee shop and it's raining out. Somebody holds the door open for you. You say, thank you. You're walking out of the coffee shop and it's raining out and somebody slams the door on you. You say, thank you. You're in traffic. You're late for an appointment. Somebody cuts you off. You say, thank you. You get up in the middle of the night and you stub your toe and it hurts. You say, thank you. To harmonize and network kindness. Kind stands for keep inspiring noble deeds. And I can't think of anybody I'd rather have inspiring us with noble deeds than remarkably wonderful Maria Espinoza. Maria, please say a huge hello to 356,728 people around the world.
Now that's impressive. That is really impressive. And here I am trying to get centered so I don't go off.
Oh, you are. You're centered. You're wonderful. You're wonderful. And we're so happy that you're here. That's the most important thing. So wonderful Maria Espinoza. She is, her name belies really who she is. Now you see on the screen this remarkably bountiful, beautiful, beneficent being. And if she told you chronologically what her age is, you wouldn't believe it. So we're not going to go there. But what we are going to do is we're going to talk about who she is from the point of her literary capabilities and how she touches people through her life experiences. Because Maria, in addition to being an American Book Award winner, she has known intimately tragedy and resilience. And she knows that even though tragedy strikes, with resilience, you can bring joy and happiness into your life, no matter the circumstances. So with that as an intro, I'd like to go right into your current book, which is called Suburban Souls, but don't hold it up yet. Let's just talk about you, a little bit about your background and how you came to write this very powerful, moving journal, as it were.
Well, I always tell people that I'm all the characters in my novels, which is really true because I have to somehow feel each of them in order to write them. So I am each of the characters.
I'm going to interrupt you for a moment because this is something fantastic. I'm an author. I've published three books, but they're all, for want of a better term, nonfiction.
Yes,
writing a novel, writing in that genre is, I believe, a very different type of process. And I'm interested that you said that you take on the persona of each one of the characters.
Yes, like an actor, but even going deeper, because I really have to feel their thoughts, feel their bodies, really identify with them in order to have enough interest to write about them. So Suburban Souls is, very briefly, the story of a very struggling family of German Jewish Holocaust survivors. Financially, they're okay. They're in an affluent upper class suburb of San Francisco. The father has a very good job as a scientist in a national laboratory. The wife is at home with a baby and two young girls. And she could be blissfully happy. She is totally miserable.
Wait a minute, not just miserable, totally miserable.
Yes, well, not totally, but pretty miserable.
Okay, did she become miserable after the third birth or she had been living in misery for a while?
I think she'd been living in misery, but it was accentuated by being at home in relative isolation in the suburbs with the children and feeling all kinds of emotions that she never dealt with. And she'd had a very hard childhood. Very difficult indeed. She barely escaped the German concentration camps. She and her aunt and uncle got out just in time. And they financially did well, but it was very hard. And so she's living a lot in the past, and she's never processed or come to terms with the past. And so a lot of it just erupts in enormous temper flare-ups and enormous, really, outbreaks of insanity, which is really what she goes through at the end.
Wait a minute. And she gets to be at the level that you call insanity. Because again, insanity can be looked at many different ways by different people.
True.
So you see somebody acting up, oh, they're insane. But we use it in the colloquial sense. But insanity, in a technical sense, literally takes over one's life. And now it doesn't allow you to live a functioning life. Is that where the kind of level of insanity we're talking about?
Yeah, that's a good point about insanity. And I wouldn't call her insane exactly. I would call her just very disturbed, so disturbed and not in control of her emotions or her thoughts, because she's never actually looked at them in the face and she's never really given thanks for what she's had. And there's a lot of blocked light, I would call it, in her.
Ooh, yeah. Wait a minute. That's a beautiful term. You didn't say darkness. You said blocked light.
Yes, exactly.
I think that, well, see, you're an author. That is a beautiful term. Have you used that before?
No, I just.
It just came out. That was really nice. So let me ask you about her husband for the moment. Yeah. He also escaped prior to events.
His family also got out just in time.
So did they meet because of mutual interest? Or the families knew each other, or they met?
The mother was very smart and just plotted and got them all out. Very religious, very woman, a very orthodox religious woman. They never knew the other family. They were totally different worlds. So he got out when he was about 13. He spent some time in Israel during the Second World War. He emigrated to the United States, where his family had already arrived.
And so how did those two families, how did the now father meet the now insane mother?
I think they met in a coffee shop in Chicago. So
wait a minute. Well, they were ordering their fancy lattes and they heard each other speaking German or a German accent or something.
I think it was before they had lattes. It was probably a Horn and Hardart.
By the way, it's so funny you say that. I want to tell you something, a story. Only because we're still talking right now, we're having good fun, right? By the way, when was the last time somebody said F you to you, Maria, and you laughed?
Yeah.
Did you hear my introduction?
I did.
Okay. Oh, F you. And okay.
Otherwise, I might be quite upset.
Right, but now you won't be, right? Now you hear a few capital M. Fun, Barry Shore's around here somewhere. So it's so funny you say about Horn and Hardart. Now, most people who are listening are under the age of 37. That's 80% of the people listening to us. So they have no idea what we're talking about from two perspectives. Number one, because it's a worldwide audience. And so outside the United States, they're saying, what are they talking about? And the second is people under the age of 37 have no idea what we're talking about, even though they live in the United States. So go and do a search for Horn and Hardart. Hardart, I think, is H-A-R-D-A-R-T, something like that. But the reason I mention it and that Maria mentions it is because it was a phenomenon at the time, let's say the 40s, 50s, and 60s, before they closed down. But you're ready. This is the reason I'm telling you the story. That's backdrop. Because Horn and Hardart style service is coming back into the United States. And you say, what? Look at her face. Yeah, huh? Why? Maybe not in Albuquerque, New Mexico, but it is coming back, roaring back. Why? Because of the pressure on restaurant service, if the $15 minimum wage comes into being, which, by the way, may not be a bad idea, but I'm not going there politically. But the point is that you have to be careful of what your costs are in service, right? Whereas if you go to Horn and Hardart, all you have to do is open up a window and pull out the food that's there. So this, I used to get apple pie in New York. And it was delicious, right? Or, you know, the macaroni or the tuna fish. But you just go up to the window and pull out what it is that you want. So there's no longer necessity of more people serving. So it's funny that you bring that up because it's things that talk about full circle. We're coming back to that kind of what I'll call less interaction, more efficient delivery of product. So here are these two beings from similar backgrounds, but divergent, come together in Chicago at this place called the Horn and Hardart, where many romances blossomed or began, right, over the course of years. And I guess, how did they even meet? Did they each hear each other with a German accent? What was the point?
I think he asked if he could sit down at her table because she was attractive looking. And she said yes. And they began talking. And of course, he asked her out. And that eventually led to marriage, children, leaving Chicago and going to California to begin a new life. And there you are.
Wow, that's pretty exciting stuff.
And she's still torn to the past. And he's struggled to get a college education, to get a university advanced degree. And she's home with the kids.
And does she not want to be at home with kids? Or she, in other words, does she also want to have a degree and be in the professions, or just
not particularly? I think she has some sort of secretarial degree. She's worked as a secretary. I think she's been through college, but she's not particularly ambitious. No. Mm-hmm. And also her husband very much wants her to stay home, take care of the children. That's what they did back in the early 60s, late 50s.
Can you imagine people, again, most of the people listening are under 37. Yeah. So they're scratching their heads and saying, was it really like that?
It really was.
Yes.
You know, one wage earner could make enough to support a family of four.
So let's talk about this for a moment. It's part of the scope of your novel, but it's outside of it. So Maria, let's be very personal. Have you been married? Do you have children?
I have been married twice, and I'm now living with a partner who I've been with for nearly 10 years. I have a daughter who I love very much, who lives a few blocks away. I feel very lucky that way. Unusual.
How old is your daughter that lives a few? Not yet.
Well, that won't give away my age, but that's right. Not a problem. She's 57.
Okay, but in other words, has she also married and has children?
She has a partner too, a long-term partner.
But she doesn't have any children.
No children, no.
Uh-huh. So you're not a grandmother.
I wish I were, but I'm not. No.
Okay, and it's unlikely you will be at this point.
Not in this lifetime, but that's how it goes.
Very good. And we'll talk about other lifetimes in a moment. But yeah. I'm interested because I think it's very telling about the story you're telling and this unique relationship with other people. Because when you mentioned beautifully that you're very fortunate that your daughter is close to you geographically as well as emotionally.
Yeah.
And it's there are very few things in life that bring more joy and resilience, in my humble opinion, than family.
Oh, yeah.
Now, by the way, that same group called family can bring despair and closure. Right? In other words, that same sword that cuts one way can cut the other way.
Yeah.
But in your personal life, it's brought you a great deal of benefit and enabled you to live in joy and resilience. Now, without giving away the book, because we want everybody to read the book. It's called Suburban Souls. Do you have a copy that you could hold up for a moment?
I do, right here. It's got a formidable cover, but it's a very interesting story.
Wait a minute. That is a very, I won't even say telling. It's a despairing cover. And by the way, you're holding it beautifully. It's called Suburban Souls by Maria Espinoza. And it's actually a good read, right?
Yeah. And it gets, the best part is towards the end, I have to say. I read it as the whole point. People who've read it said they couldn't put it down. They
put it down for the moment. I know you can't put it down, but put it down for the moment. You see, she loves the book so much, she couldn't put it down.
Right.
And because it is a story about redemption, let's be blunt. It's not a story about despair.
No, it's about redemption through the children, actually. Through the daughter, especially.
She has two daughters, and the newborn is also a daughter or a boy?
The baby is a boy, but he's an infant, so he doesn't really count the story as being.
Okay, but in terms of the relationship, it's a daughter, which mimics you. And is it the older daughter or the second daughter?
Well, there are two daughters, but main character is the older daughter named Hannah.
Hannah, with an H at the end?
Yes.
Okay, double H, double A, double N.
Yeah.
Aha! Double N, you see?
Yes.
Double N. F-U-N-N. So you're a secret fun lover. That's very good. Let's talk about, if you'd be so kind, The dominant theme of Suburban Souls, what do you see as that unique thread or river that runs through it that is keeping people from putting it down?
Well, first of all, what's going to happen next? And also perhaps a kind of fascination with what's going on with people, what is causing them to act as they do. And sometimes a slight shock at their actions, particularly Gerda's, who can really let loose.
What's her name again?
Her name is Gerda. And at one point she dances on the front porch to a rock song, holding the baby in her arms precariously. And her husband comes home from work and sees her dancing, holding the baby, whom she could drop at any moment. And she yells out at him, "Hey, you never had liked to have any fun. What's wrong with you?" And and the girls, the two daughters, are standing there and just dumbfounded, not quite knowing what to do.
But the good news is that she's fully clothed.
Oh, yes.
In today's world, one might have thought she wouldn't be. She's fully clothed. And what is her husband's name?
Her husband's name is Saul.
S-O-L.
Yeah, S-O-U-L, Saul.
S-O-U-L?
Yes, Saul.
Wait a minute.
Paul, before he became baptized, Saul.
That's his given name, S-O-U-L?
That's a good old Jewish name, S-A-U-L.
Oh, S-A-U-L. I thought you said S-O-U-L.
No.
Because I was looking, and I thought that might have been a play on words, Suburban Sauls.
No.
Okay, so Saul. Wait a minute, he became baptized?
No, I'm talking going back to the Old Testament now.
Oh, Saul. Very good. Okay, so he's Saul, and
her name
but Hannah is sort of the, not sort of, she is the redemptive spirit. Is that fair to say?
No, she's not. She's the one who causes redemption in others in terms of struggling against her, I'd say. She's the one who's a lost soul. She never made it. She's blocked the light, as I said. And Saul is seeking enlightenment in his own way by going to a psychic, by studying meditation. And he remembers that he had an ancestor, a great-great-grandfather, who was a healer. And he tries to tap into some of that energy.
Ooh, wait a minute. This is exciting stuff. By the way, what does Saul teach at university?
No, he works in a laboratory.
So in the lab, what is he researching?
He's researching chemical elements, chemical combinations, how catalysts work, how they affect each other.
Ah, so it fits his personality. In other words, you're telling me if he's seeking enlightenment, that's very in tune with what he's doing. In other words, the idea of mixing chemicals to get a response or a reaction to create something.
Yes. In fact, he goes back in his memories to having studied alchemy in a past life.
Wait a minute. This is so wonderful. I happen to be a huge fan of alchemy.
Really? Really, truly?
May I tell you why?
Why?
Most people, if you hear the word, if they even know what it means, if you ask people who even know what it means, they'll tell you, oh, that's somebody who's trying to transmute copper or tin into gold or silver. That's what people think alchemists did. And it's true, but that was the ruse they used so that people wouldn't really know. The true alchemist was one who was seeking enlightenment. The ability, people who played with transmutation of metals, they knew they couldn't. And that really wasn't they were interested in. Sometimes they would get investors and, you know, just con people to get by and such like that. But the true alchemy of life is transmuting your being and to enable that light to no longer be blocked. You use that remarkable term. I wrote it down. I love it. I may use it again, Maria. The blocked light. You didn't say dark. The blocked light, because in each one of us, we have radiant light. We are light. That's who we are. We are energy. Am I correct when I say this?
Oh, very much. In fact, I think about Blake, the poet, William Blake, about open the doors of perception to let him.
So we're in simpatico, we're in tune. So the real key of alchemy is enabling the self to emerge, like Blake and like those beautiful pictures, that light that is in every single one of us by definition, by the way. If you are a human being, you are created not just in the image of the Creator, but with a spark of the divine. And by definition, only you can block it and only you can unlock it. Am I right?
Oh, yeah. And I think about the whole Kabbalistic theory of...
Well, hold your hand. Just hold yourself right there. We're going to keep people on the edge of the seat because we're going to go to a sponsored commercial, okay? So just be right. We'll be right back with amazing, wonderful Maria Espinoza in just a moment or so because we're...
Imagine the kind of place you would want to shop for your favorite fur baby pet. honestpets.co. Well, you found it, honestpets.co, not .com, .co. This is your go-to spot for the best, the cleanest pet treats that exist anywhere on the planet. All of the brands go through a rigorous review to make sure they meet the high standards of cleanliness, health benefits, and naturalness. This site was started by a husband and wife team, and it's veteran-owned, and that care about pets, especially dogs and cats, and coming soon, bird treats. These are very nice young people who really care about making a difference because a portion of proceeds go to support veteran organizations with a focus on service dogs. This is the place where you want to go. You want to tell your friends. This has the finest, yummiest, freshest, all-natural treats and stuff for your fur baby. So go there, honestpets.co. honestpets.co. Do it now. Good day, beautiful, bountiful, beloved beings. As most of you know, I am 72 years chronologically and recovering from being a quadriplegic. But now to stay active, I swim 2 miles a day, 6 days a week. Hello. Now you can imagine I know a thing or two about aches and pains. And until recently, I thought they're just part of the fact of life you deal with every day. But then I tried 100% drug-free Relief Factor. I've been taking their convenient packs 3 times a day, and I can tell you, I am feeling noticeably better. You hear that? Noticeably better. Relief Factor is giving me more oomph and less oh. And the secret I've been told because I investigated is there are 4 ingredients. 4 key ingredients. Each one supports a different metabolic pathway in the body, which allows the inflammation that I may have to get reduced from my back, my hips, or my knee. And if you have everyday aches and pains, I urge you to check out Relief Factor. It's 100% drug-free and designed to be taken every single day. It's not going to hurt your tummy. You can get out and you can stay out of pain. So to make this really easy and to make it so there's no barrier, you really want to do this, go to relieffactor.com/joy, relieffactor.com/joy, and check out their quick start program. It's a 3-week program discounted to $19.95, and the founders, a father and son team named Seth and Pete Talbert, they are here to get rid of aches and pains. So do what I did. Go to relieffactor.com/joy. Order the 3-week quick start for yourself. You'll be glad you did.
Good day, beautiful, bountiful, beloved, immortal beings, and good-looking people. Remember, you're good-looking because you're always looking for and finding the good. We have good in abundance. Her name is Maria Espinoza, and everything you want to know about Maria, you can find at www.BarryShore.com. www, what a wonderful world. BarryShore.com. BarryShore, and we left you all on the edge of your seats as Maria was about to explain to us Kabbalistic insights into life. So before we do that, I just want to make mention to everybody, Maria is not just published as an author, number of different books and such, but she's a poet, she's a translator, she's a teacher. She's been in so many different reviews and such. She is class itself. And I'm glad that we're in class with you. And I want to make mention to everybody that we're in the midst, coming out of, thank God, a pandemic. Now, the pandemic, if you look at the word P-A-N-D-E-M-I-C, look at the first three letters, look at the last two letters of the word pandemic, and you'll get the word panic. Ah! Because that's where people have been. They've been panicking, corrosive thinking, more so than the threat of the disease. Yes, the disease is real. But it's the panic that people allow themselves to tap into. And according to the National Institute of Mental Health, mental illness in the United States of America, which, by the way, thank God we're blessed to have over 330 million people, but there are tens of millions of people who do suffer with some part of the spectrum called mental illness. Am I correct in that, Maria?
Yeah, I know. It's hard.
And I think it's a lot to do with the blocking of the light. Now, granted, some of it is certainly chemical. We talked about chemists.
Yeah.
Chemical imbalance.
But we create the chemicals in our bodies, too.
We'll get there. I want you to talk about this. But there is a chemical imbalance that is, say, in a certain percentage, but it's a small percentage of people who do suffer with what we call, for want of a better term, mental illness. It's really mental health we're trying to get to. So share with us some Kabbalistic insights.
Oh, my heavens. About transmuting literally copper or base metal into gold and metaphorically transmuting the baser elements of the self into the higher elements of the self. But it also involves looking at the shadow side. And I think that Suburban Souls, my novel, looks a lot at the shadow side. And I think as a writer, what I'm trying to do is integrate both sides, because as the psychologist Carl Jung said, if you ignore the shadow side, it erupts. And this is partly what causes Gerda's crazy acting, crazy thinking, is that she doesn't look honestly at the dark side of herself. And I think her daughter, Hannah, succeeds in breaking through and opening herself to the light, opening herself to all the forces.
How old is Hannah at this time?
Hannah is beginning, she's 13. At the end, she's 15.
So she's in the, for want of a better term, we'll call it the Anne Frank process.
Yes, and she's at a very difficult time just growing up, just becoming physically and mentally a woman. Physically a woman, and it's hard. And she's very sensitive, very loving. She feels her father and her mother internally fighting inside her. She feels her father's anger at her mother, and she feels all her love for her father. And she loves her mother very much, and she feels her mother's craziness in her. So she feels these two forces drive her to despair, really drive her to a deep place. And by some set of circumstances, she meets a psychic, a very imperfect woman who's got her own struggles, happens to be Saul's guru, mentor. She finds the psychic, and the psychic, Shivaya, a Danish woman, takes Hannah in the dead of night off to a commune in the Santa Cruz Mountains, thinking this is the only thing that can help Hannah, who's at the point of suicide. Really, she's been standing by the railroad tracks thinking I should really just do away with myself because it's easier than going on. Well, Shivaya takes her to a Buddhist commune in the mountains. And there, with the tranquility of the mountains, the forest, the ocean nearby, the peace and the support of the people in the community, she starts to, how can I say, achieve some kind of clarity, find herself.
I'm deeply moved by this, just hearing the story. Let me tell you the word health as an acronym, because I love acronyms, I love words. Health stands for helping everyone achieve life through happiness. That's what health is.
Mm.
Because when you become capable of understanding that you are a catalyst, as you say, for unblocking, removing the blockage of light that exists in other people, because oftentimes, let's be blunt, it's oftentimes more real for another person to remove one's block than for oneself, right? So the psychic, as flawed as that person may be, really may be the one that can move the boulder or the shade away and reveal this remarkably beautiful light that now energizes the being and enables health. So yes, helping everyone achieve life through hope. See, hope, in my humble opinion, is one of the most powerful four-letter words anybody can ever use. Hope stands for helping others progress every day. That's what hope does. It gives one the ability to make it through another day. And if you make it through another day, then you have opportunity to let the light shine through. Is that correct?
Yeah, very much.
Oh, this is so beautiful. Tell us more about the tortured life. Well, let's talk about Hannah's younger sister. How old is she and what's her name?
Her name is Esther. She's 2 years younger. And she's more stoic. She's really more guarded against the mother. She's not as close to the mother, and she's much closer to the father, very protective of her father and protective of the baby. So she's the rather stoic one, the most balanced of all of them, I would say.
And now, does her father, does Saul, reciprocate the love to Esther, or is he a stoic himself?
He loves Hannah very much. He loves Esther very much. He's not easily able to express his emotions, which is sad. But he loves all his children. He loves both daughters equally, I'd say, in different ways. And he feels sad because he's not able to express his love to Hannah in particular. He is able to express his love for Esther, and she's able to receive it. But for Hannah, he says, you know, I love her so much and all I do is yell at the poor kid and I can't seem to help her. And I think that the hard part of the novel and the core of it that I wanted to get across,
please,
or part of it, is people's difficulty in communication. Saul, out of sense of survival, just shuts himself off as a kind of passive male aggressive, passive aggressive kind of move. And this drives Gerda just increasingly into a frenzy.
Mm-hmm.
The more he withdraws, the more she attacks.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a kind of a vicious circle, really. And I've seen it in so many families, so many relationships.
Have you ever experienced it personally?
Yes, I have.
I mean, that's why I say that with great love. I didn't want to say it to attack you. I'm asking because...
Oh, yeah, I have. On both sides of the coin, I've experienced mm-hmm. it, yeah.
And that's a very difficult place to live, isn't it?
It is. You want somebody to hear you and you think they're just shutting you out. So you shout louder and louder and they just go further back. So what's the way out of it? You have to say, okay, they are who they are. They're not going to hear me in this way. So I just have to let it go. They're not going to hear me sometimes. That's the hardest part.
So do Goethe and Saul divorce?
No, at the end, they are separated. She eventually dies.
Ah! Perhaps. Excuse me. You killed her off?
She dies in a car accident.
Wait a minute. That was self-induced or was it truly an accident?
Well, she's just driving crazily and had an accident. Not on purpose, but just driving.
Well, yes and no. She was driving crazily. That's on purpose.
Okay. Well, she was just in despair.
And she didn't intend to die, but she did.
She's trying to save Hannah from what she thinks is a terribly corrupt place, the Buddhist commune. She has all kinds of fearful images about the Buddhist commune. She wants to save her daughter.
Oh.
But actually, in dying, she actually saves her daughter. I mean, her death is a kind of sacrifice on another level to take my daughter's life. It's tragic, but that's how it goes.
Yeah, and again, I want everybody to understand something. I am interviewing and sharing with you one of the most fascinating souls that I've experienced in a long time, Maria Espinoza, because you wrote this. I don't know how you slept at night, but you're writing this. I bet you there were some days you didn't. You just kept. When you write, by the way, I need to know this because you're an author. Do you write with a typewriter? Do you write with a keyboard? Do you write with pen and paper? How, or pencil?
All kinds of ways. I usually write longhand and rough draft, but then I transpose it to the computer.
You know, this is very important what you just said.
Yeah, because the brain works slightly differently, I think, by hand and by computer. Yes. But sometimes it just comes out directly on the computer.
Fine. But and the more skill that you get and looking and know where the keys are and then keep writing, sometimes it spills out. But longhand is a wonderful process, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just a totally different process for the mind and the body. Yeah.
Oh, I'm just so happy for that, that we're doing this. This is wonderful. Okay, I'm going to ask you a pointed question. Usually, I'm going to put you on the spot. You hear this?
Yeah.
Now get ready, kid. Maria, what is your most fervent desire? And you have 90 seconds only to answer.
Oh, my God. You know, I think really the idea of spreading light in some through compassion, through joy, through just love, in a just spending when I die to feel that I've left light in the world. I think that's like,
what a wonderful fervent desire. Okay, with that, what I'm going to do, I'm going to envelop you in front of 362,000 people around the world. I'm going to give you a hug in front of these people. Then I'm going to give a blessing to everybody. So you ready for, I'll tell you what a hug stands for. Hug stands for harmonizing, unlimited giving. How do you like that?
Okay.
Harmonizing, unlimited giving. One, two, three.
Wow, that was strong. Read my book. It's a really interesting story.
Everybody's going to get the book, God willing. Suburban.
And also,
Souls.
My website is my name, Maria Espinoza.
Just go to my website. Everything about you is there.
Good.
Go to BarryShore.com. It's all about you, not about me. It's all about you. So everybody, our blessing. Go forth, live exuberantly, spread the seeds of joy, happiness, peace, and love. Go mad. Go make a difference. And remember, the joy of living with Barry Shore, BarryShore.com, www.whatawonderfulworld, smile, seeing miracles in life every day, or as my 8-year-old niece says, seeing miracles in everyday life. Create the kind of world you want to live in, full of light. Create stands for causing rethinking, enabling all to excel. Use 4-letter words, love, life, grow, gift, free, hope, play, pray. And the F-U word, tell the world, F-U, capital N, capital N, fun. And use the two most powerful words in the English language 3 times a day, every single day for the rest of your life, consciously and conscientiously. Say thank you, thank you, thank you. Thank stands for to harmonize and network kindness. To harmonize and network kindness. Everyone you meet. And Maria's novel says it's true. Everyone you meet is fighting a battle you know nothing about. Therefore, be kind always. Connect in nature daily. That's what kind stands for. Do that, and you will bring about the change in this world that we all want to see. Don't block the light, as Maria has taught us. Let the light shine through and be your own alchemist. Transform and transmute your very being into that which you are meant to be, which is a light bearer, a benefit to the world. Bring hope, helping others progress every day. And with that, we leave you, and we thanks to wonderful Maria Espinoza. Thank you. Everybody should get a copy of Suburban Souls because it will touch your very soul. Thank you, Maria. Best
Thank
wishes.
You, Barry.
Make it a great one. Bye now.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye. Everybody, another remarkable session. We are just so happy that you're here. It is such a pleasure and delight being with you. And we urge everybody, share this with at least 5 people. So we'll have over 1.5 million people around the world finding out about Maria Espinoza and her book, Suburban Souls, and her other books. Go forth, live the blessing, spread the seed of joy, happiness, peace, and love. Bye now.